Welcome to Zichud Daf Siman Mem Rabbi Avram Goldreich, and today we're Maseches Pesachim Daf Ein Zayin, the seventh parak, Ketzad Solin. This is going to be an abbreviated shir. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, after clarifying that the word Mo'odo in its specified time is the source that the Tamid, Pesach, Musafim, Omer, and Shtei Alechem are Docha Tuman Shabbos, the Gemara asks why it was necessary to mention Mo'odo so many times. The Torah should have stated it regarding one offering, and we could derive through analogy all the other offerings from it. The Gemara goes on to explain that if the Torah had only written it with the Tamid, it's because the Tamid is Tadir HaKalil, the most frequent offering and completely burned on the Mizbeach. If it had written it only with the Pesach, one might have thought it's because the Pesach is punishable with Karas. And if it had only written with the Tamid and the Pesach, then one would have thought it's because each has a Chumrah, but Karbanat Tzibur would not be Docha. And if it had written as well by Karbanat Tzibur, one might have thought it's because they all come for Kapara, but the Omer and Shtei Alechem, which do not come for Kapara, Elahatir Ba'alma, rather only to permit Chadash, it would not be Docha. And if it had only written with the Omer and Shtei Alechem, one might have thought it's because they're important and permit Chadash, but the other offerings brought for Kippur would not be Docha. Point number two, the Gemara mentions the Amoraim in the Yeshiva that they presumed that all are in agreement that Tuma is overridden rather than permitted in regard to the community, and therefore that Tzitz is needed to affect acceptance for the Kabbanis brought in a state of Tuma. Now, this must be the opinion of the Tana of our Mishnah, but there is no Tana who holds Tuma Hutra but Tzibur El Rabbi Yehuda, that Tuma is permitted in regard to the Tzibur except Rabbi Yehuda. Now, in regards to Tuma Dechuyi but Tzibur, Rashi explains that even though the Torah permits the Karbanos to be brought in a state of Tuma, it's not a Heter Gamur. Therefore, it's only permitted if Tawar Kohanim cannot be found, and it also still requires a Tzitz to affect acceptance. And point number three, the Amoraim in the Yeshiva also presumed that all agree that Ein HaTzitz Meratza Al Achilos, that tzitz is not meratza on the part of the offering that is eaten, and suggests, therefore, that the Mishnah is not in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua. For it was taught in the Braisa, the Pasuk states, Vasisa olasecha abasa vahadam, you shall make your ola offerings, the meat and the blood. And Rabbi Yeshua says, im ein dam, ein basar, im ein basar, ein dam. If there's no blood, because it's been disqualified from being thrown on the Mizbeach, its meat may not be burned on the Mizbeach, and vice versa. Rabbi Yehuda says, dam apu bishein basar, there is blood, even though there is not meat, meaning the blood of the offering may be applied to the Mizbeach, even if the meat has become lost or unfit. And he brings psukim to support his position. Now, the Gemara explains that since Rabbi Yeshua says that we need the blood and the flesh to be valid in order for the blood to be thrown, and it was stated that it's presumed that when tumah exists, the tumah is not meratz on the part which is eaten, making it invalid, how can any offering be brought in a state of tumah? So the Gemara concludes that Rabbi Yeshua was referring to a karban yachid, whereas the Mishnah was referring to communal offerings where the tumah is hutra b'tzibur, retracting the original assumption of the Amoraim. So once again, the three points are number one, after clarifying that the word mo'odo in its specified time is the source that the Tami Pesach, Musafim, Omer, and Shtei Alechem are Docha, Tumah, and Shabbos, the Gemara asks why it was necessary to mention mo'odo so many times. The Torah should have stated in regarding one offering, and we could derive through analogy all the other offerings from it. The Gemara goes on to explain that if the Torah had only written it with the Tamid, it's because the Tamid is Tadir Bakalio, the most frequent offering and completely burned on the Mizbeach. If it had written it only with the Pesach, one might have thought it's because the Pesach is punishable with Karas. If it had only written with the Tamid and the Pesach, then one would have thought it's because each has a Chumrah, but Karban Sibur would not be Docha. And if it had written as well by Karban Sibur, one might have thought it's because they come for Kapara, but the Omer Shtei Alechem, which do not come for Kapara, Elahatya Ba'alma, but rather only to permit Chadash, it would not be Docha. And if it had only written with the Omer and Shtei Alechem, one might have thought that it's because they are important and permit Chadash, but the other offerings brought for Kapara would not be Docha. Point number two, the Gemara mentions regarding the Amoraim in the Yeshiva that they presumed that all are in agreement that Tuma is overridden rather than permitted in regard to the community, and therefore that Tzitz is needed to affect acceptance for the Kabbanis brought in a state of Tuma. This must be the opinion of the Tana of our Mishnah, for there's no Tana who holds Tuma Hutra but Tzibur El Rabbi Yehuda, that Tuma is permitted in regard to the Tzibur except Rabbi Yehuda. Now, in regards to Tuma Dechuyah but Tzibur, Rashi explains that even though the Torah permits the Kabbanis to be brought in a state of Tuma, it's not a Heter Gamur. Therefore, it's only permitted if Tahor Kahanim cannot be found, and it also still requires a Tzitz to affect acceptance. And point number three, the Amoraim in the Yeshiva also presumed that all agree that Ein HaTzitz Meratza Al Achilos, that Tzitz is not Meratza on the part of the offering that is eaten, and suggests, therefore, the Mishnah is not in accordance with the opinion of Yeshua, for it was taught in the Braisa. The Pasuk states, Vasisa Olasecha Abasar Bahadam, you shall make your ola offerings, the meat and the blood. Rabbi Yeshua says, im ein dam, ein basar. Im ein basar, ein dam. If there is no blood, because it has been disqualified from being thrown in the Mizbeach, its meat may not be burned on the Mizbeach, and vice versa. Rabbi Eliezer says, Dam afu b'shem basar, there is blood, even though there is no meat, meaning that the blood of the offering may be applied to the Mizbeach, even if the meat has become lost or unfit, and he brings Psukim to support his position. So the Gemara explains that since Rabbi Yeshua says that we need the blood and the flesh to be valid in order for the blood to be thrown, and it was stated that it's presumed that when Tuma exists, that tzitz is not meratza on the part which is eaten, making it invalid, how can any offering be brought in a state of Tuma? So the Gemara concludes Rabbi Yeshua was referring to a carbon yachid, whereas the Mishnah was referring to carbonas from the tzibur, where the Tuma is hutra b'tzibur, retracting the original presumption of the Amoraim. All right, so now we go to our simon for Daf Ayin Zayin, and our simon is an aze, a goat. So here goes. The long line of various goat offerings that were docha tuma were paraded in front of the Kohen Gadol wearing the tzitz, since the tuma was duchuya b'tzibur, and who was checking to make sure that neither the blood nor the basar were disqualified. Once again, in slow motion. The long line of various goat offerings, goat, that must be worn Daf Ayin Zayin. The long line of various goat offerings that were docha tuma, which reminds us that the Gemara explains why the word mo'odo was brought so many times to teach that the tami, pesach, musafim, omer, shtei lechem are docha tuma and Shabbos. So the long line of various goat offerings that were docha tuma were paraded in front of the Kohen Gadol wearing the tzitz, since the tuma is duchuya b'tzibur. Which reminds us, the Gemara mentions regarding the Amoraim in the Yeshiva that they presume the lechuli alma tuma duchuya hi b'tzibur, that all are in agreement that tuma is overridden rather than permitted in regard to the community, ubay tzitz or ratzos, and therefore the tzitz is needed to affect acceptance for the karbanos brought in a state of tuma. Rashi explains that even though the Torah permits the karbanos to be brought in a state of tuma, it's not a het gamur, and therefore it's only permitted if tahor kohanim could not be found, and it also still requires the tzitz to affect acceptance. So the long line of various goat offerings that were docha tuma were paraded in front of the Kohen Gadol wearing the tzitz, since the tuma is duchuya b'tzibur, and it was checking to make sure that neither the blood nor the basar were disqualified. Which reminds us, the Amoraim and Yeshiva also presume that all agree that ein hatzitz meratza al achilos, that tzitz is not meratza on the part of the offering that is eaten, and suggest therefore that the Mishnah is not in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua, for it was taught in the Braisa, the pasuk states, Vasisa ola secha habasar vahadam, you shall make your ola offerings, the meat and the blood. Rabbi Yeshua says, im ein dam, ein basar, im ein basar, ein dam. If there's no blood, because it's been disqualified from being thrown in the Mizbeach, its meat may not be burnt on the Mizbeach, and vice versa. The Gemara explains that since Rabbi Yeshua says that we need the blood and the flesh to be valid in order for the blood to be thrown, and it was stated that it is presumed that when the tumah exists, that tzitz is not meratz on the part which is eaten, making it invalid, how can any offering be brought in the state of tumah? The Gemara concludes Rabbi Yeshua was referring to a karban yachid, whereas the Mishnah was referring to karbanos of the tzibor, where the tumah is hutra b'tzibor, retracting the original presumption of the Amoraim. So once again, the long line of various goat offerings that were docha tumah were paraded in front of the Kohen Gadol wearing the tzitz, since the tumah was duchuya b'tzibur, and was checking to make sure that neither the blood nor the basar were disqualified. All right, now it's time to go to our four-block back chazara. Daf Ayin Gimel. So the simur Daf Ayin Gimel is a giant ostrich egg. So here goes. The destructive cone who like to crack giant ostrich eggs. Giant ostrich eggs? That must mean we're on Daf Ayin Gimel. The destructive cone who liked to crack giant ostrich eggs for no reason was dismayed when he saw the emurim of a shekht of Pesach no eaters brought on the Mizbech, which reminds us, Rav Huna Bar Chinina said to his son that when he goes before Rabbi Zirikai, he should ask the following question, according to the one who says, Mekalka b'chabura pater, one who acts destructively on Shabbos is pater, how can the Mishnah rule shchatu shlolochav chayiv? Matik, and one who shekhs a Pesach on Shabbos for those who cannot eat is chayiv, what improvement did he effect? This is a purely destructive act which he should not be chayiv for, according to this opinion. So the Gemara answered, Tikkun im alul yerdu. He improved the animal insofar that once its emurim have gone up onto the Mizbeach, they should not go down. Therefore, the Shechita has served a constructive purpose. So the destructive cone who liked to crack giant ostrich eggs for no reason was dismayed when he saw the emurim of a shekht of Pesach with no eaters brought on the Mizbeach, while grazing Asham on its way to be offered up as an ola, which reminds us, Rav Huna said in the name of Rav, that if an Asham had been consigned to grazing and then someone shechted it before it had been developed a blemish with no specific intention, it's kasher as an ola. So the Gemara asks that since we see that Rav holds lo boy akira, that an offering's designation does not require a conscious akira, rather its designation changes automatically, as Rashi explains that since now it stands to be used for the purposes of an ola, there's no need to eliminate its previous status of an Asham, then even if the animal has not yet been consigned to grazing, it should be valid as an ola. The Gemara answer is gezer lacha kapara atu lifnei kapara. It's a gezer d'rabbanan that if an Asham is shechted after the owner has received kapara, but before it's consigned to grazing, it's not fit as an ola, because otherwise people might think it can be offered as an ola even before the owner received kapara. So the destructive Kohen who liked to crack giant ostrich eggs for no reason was dismayed when he saw the Emurim of a Shechta Pesach with no eaters brought on the Mizbeach, while grazing Ashman on its way to be offered up as an Ola saw the meat of an onerous Pesach being burned up immediately, which reminds us. Rav Chisda challenges Rav's view that a carbon does not require a kir based on the mission that states that if one shechted the Pesach on Shabbos and it then became known that the onerous had withdrawn from it, he's not liable to bring a chattis for being machal Shabbos. And a brisa was taught in reference to the Mishnah that if there was a case like that on a weekday, yisaref miyad, an animal should be burned immediately. Rav Chisda said that if you say that a carbon does not require akira, then at the moment owners withdrew, it was a shlamim. And the reason for its disqualification is because of an external factor, that it was shechted after the tamei shel bein arba'im. If that's the case, the carbon requires a change of appearance, meaning time should pass so that the meat looks different from losing its moisture, should not be burned immediately. The Gemara will bring a number of attempts to resolve the contradiction between Rav and the Braisa. Taf Ein Dalet, so the Simra Ein Dalet is an aid, a witness. So here goes. The witness, that must mean we're on Taf Ein Dalet. The witness saw the bandit wearing a large Gidi Mekuas helmet, which reminds us, there's a Malkovitz regarding the method of roasting the Pesach. Rabbi Yosef Glili says, we bring a spit of pomegranate wood and thrust it into the mouth of the carcass until it passes through its bottom, and one places its severed legs and its entrails inside it. Rashi explains that this is done to comply with the Pasuk, Sli Eish Rosha Al Krov Val Kirbo. Fire roasted its head with its legs and its entrails, which implies that these parts are to be roasted together with the body. Rabbi Kiva says, Kibin Bishu is said, this is considered a form of cooking, Elatoin Chutzala. Rather, we hang the legs and entrails from the outside of the carcass. And Rabbi Shmuel would call the roasted Pesach Tuch Tuch, because he held that Rabbi Yossi agreed that the entrails were roasted inside the body cavity, and they would make the sound of tuch tuch, like food boiled in a covered pot. Rabbi Tarfon called the carbon Pesach Gidi Makulas, a helmeted kid. He held, like Rabbi Kiva, that the legs and entrails were placed on the spit above the head of the animal, resembling a helmet on the head of a warrior. So the witness saw the bandit wearing a large Gidi Makulas helmet and wielding a pomegranate spit, which reminds the Mishnah said that a pomegranate spit was used. The Gemara explains the reason a metal spit is not used, since a part of the spit becomes hot through exposure to the fire. All of it, including that which is covered by the carcass, will become hot, and the carcass will be partly roasted on account of the heat of the spit rather than the fire itself. And the Torah states, Tzli Eish, v'lo tzli machm z'davar achir. The Pesach must be roasted by fire and not roasted on account of something else. The Gemara goes on to explain that the reason why the spit cannot be brought from other woods, such as palm wood, fig wood, oak, carob, or sycamore, is that they secrete liquid, and it's as though the Pesach is cooked. So the witness saw the bandit wearing a large Gidi Makulas helmet and wielding a pomegranate spit, threatening the person sitting peacefully roasting his meat on coals. Which reminds, the Gemara teaches that whenever Rav Acha and Ravina disagreed, Rav Acha was the one with the more machmir opinion, and Ravina was the one with the more makel view, and the halacha always follows Ravina, lilkula, except for three disputes where Rav Acha is more lenient and the halacha follows his opinion. The first dispute was regarding umsa da'asmik, a piece of meat that turned red on account of blood oozing from a vein. Now, if one cut it and salted it, it's permitted even for cooking in a pot. The cutting helps the collected blood escape more readily. If one roasted it on a spit, it's permitted for consumption because the blood flows out during the roasting. But if one places it on coals for roasting, one of them forbids it because the heat of the coals makes it shrivel, causing it to retain the collected blood. The other permits it because the heat draws out the blood. And the halacha is that the heat draws out the blood. Daf Ein Hei. So the Simran Ein Hei is an Am Haaretz. So here goes. The Am Haaretz, that must be one Daf Ein Hei. The Am Haaretz, who was struggling to learn how to distinguish wood coals from metal coals, which reminds us, it was taught in a braisa, if one cut the Pesach and placed it over coals, Rebbe said he considered it fire roasted. Rashi explains they didn't cut the carcass apart, but rather he sliced it in several places so that it would roast quickly. Rav Chisda was asked if, in fact, Rebbe says coals are considered like fire, since the Torah stated, by Metzora, the word mikvah burned twice. It teaches us that saras on a burn also applies to a burn from a coal. So if the Torah had not included it based on the repetition, then one would not consider coal equivalent to fire roasted. So how could Rebbe consider a Pesach roasted on coals fire roasted without a special pasuk including in the Pesach? Rav Chisda replied that concerning a coal from wood, no pasuk is necessary. The pasuk was only needed to include a gachel shel maseches, coal produced from metal. So the Am Haaretz, who was struggling to learn how to distinguish wood coals from metal coals, was so engrossed that he didn't even notice when the executioner tripped and spilt a whole cup of molten lead, which reminds us. The Gemara brings the Gezer Shava, Sreifa Sreifa Bnei Aaron, burning from the burning of Bnei Aaron, to teach how someone condemned to burning is burnt, just as the burning refers to the burning of the soul with the body remaining intact. So too here, it refers to the burning of the soul with the body remaining intact. The Gemara asks why one needs to be burned with molten lead when immersing the person in boiling water would suffice, and answers that it's because of Rav Nachman's teaching, Amar Kra, Bahaftarecha Kamocha, the Torah teaches you shall love your neighbor as yourself, Barulo Misa Yafa, choose from a favorable death by means of molten lead is less painful. So the Amaris, who was struggling to learn how to distinguish wood coals from metal coals, was so engrossed that he didn't even notice when the executioner tripped and spilt a whole cup of molten lead in front of the Kohen Gadol, who was carrying a shovel full of hot coals. Which reminds us, Rava asked if Rebbe actually said coals are classified as fire based on a conflicting brisa regarding the shovel full of fiery coals that the Kohen Gadol takes in the Kodesh Kodashim that seems to indicate flickering coals are not considered fire. So Rava resolves the contradiction by reinterpreting the brisa. If the Torah had only said a gachalei, it might be thought he should bring smoldering coals, not flickering ones. Therefore it states eish. If it only stated eish, it might be thought he may take a burning piece of wood that is half coal and half flame, so that by the time he enters the Kodesh Kodashim, it should be entirely coal. Therefore the Torah states, and he shall take a shovel full of fiery coals from atop the Mizbech. This teaches that from the time of taking from atop the Mizbeach, they should be coals. According to this interpretation, the Brice agrees with the Rebbe that a flickering coal is classified as fire. Daf Ein Vav. So the Simra Ein Vav is IV, intravenous. So here goes. The patient who was treated with pieces of piping hot meat that dripped into an IV bag of cold milk told the nurse he couldn't eat the salted ham mixed with cold vegetables and wanted the fatty kosher meat roasted next to the lean nevela instead. Once again, in slow motion. The patient who was treated with pieces of piping hot meat that dripped into an IV bag. IV bag? That must mean we're on Daf Ein Vav. The patient was treated with pieces of piping hot meat that dripped into an IV bag of cold milk, which reminds us, if something hot fell into something cold, or something cold fell into something hot, where the absorption would make it forbidden, such as meat with milk or iser v'heter, there's malchokas. Rav says, ilagavar, the upper one dominates, which Rashi explains means that if something hot falls into something cold, the upper one heats up the lower one before the lower one can cool it. Since they are then both heated, they absorb from each other. On the other hand, if something cold fell into something hot, the falling one cools off the lower one before the lower one can heat the falling one. Shmuel says, Tatagavar, the lower one dominates. So the patient was treated with pieces of piping hot meat that dripped into an IV bag of cold milk, told the nurse he couldn't eat the salted ham mixed with cold vegetables, which reminds us, it was taught in a braisa, sonu eto sonen medich. If something cold is placed into something cold, one merely rinses it. And Rav Huna said that he taught this only concerning a case where one had not salted the forbidden item. But if one had salted it, the other one is forbidden. For Shmuel said, maliach hayukaraseach. That which is salted is like that which is hot, which means that salted food has the same capacity as hot food to transfer its juices. However, it doesn't absorb juices like hot food. Therefore, if the permitted component was salted, it would not absorb the prohibited juices. Shmuel also states, kavush harukamavushal, that which was marinated is like that which is cooked. So the patient was treated with pieces of piping hot meat that dripped into an IV bag of cold milk, told the nurse he couldn't eat the salted ham mixed with cold vegetables, and wanted the fatty kosher meat roasted next to the lean nevela instead. Which reminds Rav said, basar shchut to shaman shetzal im basar nevela kachush aser. If fatty meat of a shechted animal was roasted in an oven, together with lean meat of a nevela, it is forbidden. They are fattened by each other. Rashi explains that the two meats do not touch, yet the kosher meat absorbs the aroma of the nevela. Now, even though the lean nevela doesn't give off a strong aroma, it absorbs the aroma of the fatty kosher meat, is subsequently fattened, and then emits aroma which is absorbed by the kosher meat. Levi said that even if lean meat of a shechted animal was roasted together with the fatty meat of a nevela, it's permitted because recha ba'amahu v'reach lav milsa. This is a case involving the transfer of aroma, and aroma is not a factor. All right, so that concludes this year. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldin Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.